Welcome to Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana basketball news and discussion, brought to you by the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Join me live at assemblycall.com every Thursday night and immediately following every IU game for our live IU postgame show. And visit insidethehall.com for complete coverage of IU basketball and to join the discussion in the Inside the Hall premium forum.
Indiana basketball mini-series tickets are now available online at iuhoosiers.com. Both five-game and three-game packages are now available, featuring games against Louisiana Tech, South Dakota State, Arkansas, Northwestern, and Ohio State. Come check out your Indiana Hoosiers for these games over break inside beautiful Simon Scott Assembly Hall. You can visit iuhoosiers.com for more information. Go IU!
On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, Alex Bozich and I are joined by Cam Drummond, one of our interns for this season, who has already been doing some great work covering the Hoosiers for us. We are going to react to Indiana's opening night victory over Western Illinois, kind of talk about our key takeaways from that game, look ahead to Saturday's game and to the rest of this non-conference schedule, discuss some of the other results from Tuesday night's games, and generally just kind of take the temperature for where these Hoosiers are here as the season has now begun. The games count, and obviously Indiana needs to get a lot of work done here in November, both to pad the win total and also to get prepared for a lot of tough games come December. So we talk about all of that on this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink. Before we get to that, a quick word about tickets from our sponsor SeatGeek. Do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's as if they're so big, they feel like they can get away with not caring about the customer experience. So what if the site's annoying and doesn't have the events you want? Hello, status quo. The real question is, how easy could it be if those ticketing sites actually cared? Well, a ticketing site that cares is SeatGeek. And if you want to see this in action, just take a look at the App Store, where they have over 50,000 five-star reviews. Talk about customer satisfaction. And the reason why is because they deliver a better process. SeatGeek pulls together millions of tickets from all over the web. They rate each deal on a scale of 1 to 10. And they have an interactive seat map that shows you where the tickets are going to be. So you can see it at a glance. And they have a color-coded system where green dots mean good deals, red dots are overpriced. So you can just look and see. It makes it really easy. And, I mean, perhaps best of all, every purchase is fully guaranteed. So you can shop for tickets with confidence. This is why I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. This is why when I wanted to get concert tickets this summer, SeatGeek is the place I wanted to go. My wife wants to go see Hamilton when they come to Fort Worth here next year. I'm going to SeatGeek to get my tickets. And that's why I recommend that you go to SeatGeek as well. And when you do so, you can get $10 off your first purchase. All you have to do is use the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K. Just download the SeatGeek app, use the promo code BRINK, and you will get $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code BRINK for $10 off your first purchase. All right, here is my conversation with Alex Bozich and Cam Drummond. All right, gentlemen, we finally played a game that counts. Well, we didn't play, but we watched a game that counts of the Indiana Hoosiers. Indiana is 1-0. And so let's take a little bit of time here off the top and just provide some key takeaways from that first performance. You know, I certainly have one that jumped out to me more than any other, but I'm curious first to get your guys' thoughts, Alex. So your initial thoughts on Indiana's opening night win over Western Illinois.
Yeah, when I looked around the rest of the Big Ten and saw some of the other performances, I was, I look at it as a positive night overall from Indiana. Things could have gone a lot worse, as we saw at some other places, which I'm sure we'll get into, but give them credit for taking care of business and beating an opponent that was clearly overmatched. I liked the lineup that they had in their middle of the first half. I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit more, but you know, we've talked so much in the offseason about the potential for these big lineups. I actually kind of liked the look with Trace at the five and Justin and Jerome in there with him. I just thought it was a little bit more capable of being up-tempo. I like Darmon Franklin getting out there and getting 8 assists, no turnovers. I know it's Western Illinois, but you know, there's been a lot of Indiana point guards and guards in the past who have committed 4 or 5 turnovers in a game against similar opponents. So credit Armand Franco for that. And, you know, Justin Smith, I don't want to get too carried away because it's just been Gannon and Western Illinois. And he's going to have to prove it when we get into the meat of the schedule here in December. But overall, I've just been impressed with his approach. And he did have a couple instances last night where he took some bad shots after he got things going. But for the most part, I thought he was really good in transition and letting his defense create offense. So those are kind of the high level things. I'm sure we'll get into Al Durham and some of the other guys, Jerome Hunter. I don't want to take up every takeaway before Cam gets a chance to speak here. So I'm just interested to hear what he has to say as he makes his Podcast on the Brink debut.
Yeah. Welcome to Podcast on the Brink, Cam. You've been on the assembly call, but welcome to Podcast on the Brink. Before you give your takeaways, are you and Dylan going to be doing a show this year?
We were planning on it, and then I realized that as a student taking 15 credit hours right now who has to edit all of them, it's probably not good for my sanity to do that. So we'll stick to the banner mornings and just hopping on the assembly call radio and this every now and again, probably.
Okay, sounds good. So give us your biggest takeaways from the Western Illinois game.
Right, yeah. I think Alex kind of, you know, hit on the major ones. Obviously, Justin Smith tying his career high in points, having an uber-productive night. And I think one of the important things with Smith as well was just the shot selection he had as well. I mean, he had, you know, his fair share of breakaway dunks kind of born out of the steel-heavy, aggressive defense that Indiana employed. But at the same time, you didn't see him fall into the trap that he did a couple times last year of, you know, taking the three-pointer when he just happened to be open on the perimeter. And he only took one or two of those, you know, deep mid-range shots that really isn't the bread and butter of his game. So he took smarter shots, which I think is something that Archie Miller is going to be really pleased with. And I think Armand Franklin kind of really stood out to me as well. I mean, obviously 8 assists, no turnovers for a freshman in his college debut is, you know, not a bad stat line to have. But there weren't really too many moments last night where, as an Indiana fan or as just as a casual observer, you were wanting for Devontae Green or anything. That thought never really crossed my mind because of how in control Franklin was and how he and Durham kind of divvied up the ball handling responsibilities pretty well and never seemed to be in too many out of control moments of passage or things like that. I think something to watch though is the front court, just because when you have that really big lineup, there was a period in the first half early on when they had both Deron Davis and Race Thompson in there. Indiana really can't sustain that too much just because of how much that lineup lacks mobility and how poor they are at closing down on the perimeter. So I think that's where the smaller lineup comes in. And even if you don't start out a game with that or you don't play that for a long stretch, you can hit opponents with a 2-3 minute blitz of that key lineup there of Finney Smith, Hunter, Jackson Davis, and Durham that can maybe stretch out games and really keep opposing defenses off tempo and, you know, keep everyone kind of guessing about what Indiana's going to throw in the half court sets and stuff.
Like Indiana's own little version of the death lineup. It's fun seeing those guys out there, because especially, you know, when you have the taller guards out there, I mean, you can almost go to, you know, something, and we know Archie isn't a huge proponent of switching, but you could just start switching everything and really just suffocate people. And Cam, to your point, really give people a different look. I'll tell you my biggest takeaway from last night and really from everything that we've seen so far in the offseason, and it is the comfort level and confidence of Al Durham and Justin Smith. You know, and right now, I mean, those two juniors, it's almost like they've kind of taken the team over as their own. You know, we talked a lot this offseason about kind of the last go-around for Devontae Green and Deron Davis and, you know, how would they approach that? And unfortunately, we haven't been able to see from Devontae because he just hasn't been out there. You know, and Deron was always going to play limited minutes in these early games. So you haven't really had that senior presence on the court. But what you have had is a couple of juniors that are really stepping to the forefront. And I think as we reflect on last season, and, you know, as we go through the first part of the season, you're always kind of comparing it to what you saw last year, especially from the holdovers. You know, those two guys, perhaps more than anybody else, I really felt struggled to find their comfort level on a game-in, game-out basis. Just didn't seem to always understand what their role was supposed to be on offense. Sometimes were deferential, sometimes tried to force it, but never quite seemed to feel really comfortable. You know, on a team that obviously everything revolved around Romeo and Juwan, and other guys had to pick their spots. So far this season, they just seem to really understand what their role is. They seem more confident. I mean, Al Durham, you know, that we all know the numbers, 21 points. He was, you know, perfect from the field. But man, he was just getting it and going. He's not waiting for anybody. He is just getting it and going. He seems, you know, just fully in control of himself and the team when he's out there. And came to your point with Justin, you know, yeah, he took a couple of heat check jump shots that maybe, you know, we would like to see him not take, But if that's what comes with him being confident and being in the flow, then fine, take those shots. You know, his overall game and decision making and engagement last night, as Archie talked about in the post game press conference, was outstanding. And so, you know, to me, for a team that we all kind of, you know, wondered, okay, where's the leadership going to come from? You know, how is this team going to gel? I've really been impressed with the way that those two guys have stepped to the forefront and are kind of saying, hey, guys, follow us. You know, here we go. We got this. And Alex, as you said, we're going to have to see it against tougher competition. But I think it is telling just how comfortable they look, how confident they look. I think that's a great sign for what we're going to see moving forward from a couple of guys that have been really up and down so far through their first couple of years, and really now as upperclassmen seem like they're ready to kind of seize the moment and become, hopefully, consistent contributors for this program, which is what Indiana and Archie Miller need for this season to end up playing out toward the higher end of expectations rather than the lower end. Alex.
Yeah, I agree with most of everything you said. I wasn't sure who you were going to, Jared. I'm not used to having the three man pod here, so I didn't know if Cam wanted to hop in there. But I agree with you know, Indiana needing to kind of prove it against better competition. But I feel like we're going to be saying that all month after all these games. I don't know exactly what we're going to learn from these next six games. I think it is now that the rest of the month of November, where I think there's going to be a lot of times over just saying, you know, Indiana took care of business and did what it was supposed to. But it's also important to kind of recognize that how important kind of these next few weeks are for this team, because once Florida State hits, you look at that schedule, and in past years it's been like, well, you know, they play a couple tough games and then there's maybe a two gimmies at the end of December. There's no more. Besides maybe Nebraska at home, based on kind of what we saw out of them last night, there's not going to be any moments where you look and say this is a sure thing for Indiana. So I think, you know, as easy as it is to kind of glaze over these games and you know, say we need to see it against better teams, I mean, this is really, in terms of development time and kind of building cohesiveness, figuring out rotations, this is really prime time for Indiana. So I'm, you know, in a lot of ways I was skeptical of the non-conference schedule just from a strength of schedule perspective and wondering how it would prepare Indiana. But given what's happened with the injuries and kind of given the situation with Jerome Hunter needing to get him acclimated to the game and just having so many new guys contributing, I think we may look back on this as a blessing in disguise for this team. And if they can use this month as a stepping stone to build up some confidence, and then we'll really start to figure some things out about just how good this team could be next month.
And hold that thought, because I want to talk a little bit more about the schedule, because Cam, you wrote a really good article about that. I think that'll be good to discuss. You know, but Alex, to that point, you know, about what can we take from these early games, to me, you know, these early games, especially when they don't come against great competition, it's all about habits and it's all about consistency. And Al Durham and Justin Smith have been two guys throughout their career that have had the habit of being inconsistent from game to game. You know, I think, you know, Al showed a lot of progression last year. He also had a lot of games where he had 0 points or 2 points and just never really found his footing in the game. And we know about how up and down Justin Smith has been. And so even if those guys come out through these first couple games and are dominating Portland State and Western Illinois and some of these teams that are far, far below what they're going to face in the Big Ten, if they're getting into the habit of coming out and leading and dominating every single game, I do think that's important, and I do think that's something that we can take away. So again, this is only one game. It's one data point. Now we need to see it move forward. But I've been encouraged from two guys who, again, as I said, you know, mentality has perhaps been an issue. They've really seemed to show a more mature mentality in these early, just, you know, the exhibition game, this game, you know, kind of the early ability that we've had to see them. So now we just need to see if it continues, but habits are important.
Yeah. And to kind of follow up on what you said there with the habits, look no further than the fact that Indiana had only 11 turnovers last night and a turnover percentage under 15. I didn't go back and look at every season, but I think you'd be hard pressed to go back in the last 15 years and find too many openers where Indiana took care of the ball that well, especially, you know, it wasn't something under the previous coaching staff that was emphasized. And I know last year, the first game of the year, they had a good performance, but not quite as good as what we saw last night. So just, you know, you make a really good point in terms of the habits. And even Al Durham last night, they had a turnover percentage of 14.9. And Al Durham was talking about in the postgame about how they need to cut down on the turnovers. And I'm like, you know, if you could just keep it at 14.9 the whole season, I think a lot of people would be thrilled with that.
A couple other quick takeaways from last night, just in terms of individuals. I thought it was great to see Rob Phinisee out there. You know, I thought in the exhibition game, he really looked to be kind of shying away from contact, really didn't look to be in a rhythm. And last night, he kind of looked right when he first got out there, a little bit out of rhythm. And then he got going and made a few shots, had a great little step back heat check three-pointer that he took, which he missed. But I was happy to see him have the confidence to take it, you know, for a guy who hasn't been playing that much. And then I thought defensively, he really had some possessions where we saw that, you know, Michigan State level defense of Rob, where he's just hounding guys on the ball. That was good to see. It's going to take him a little while, I think, to get fully back, but it was good to see that from him. And then I think we have to talk about the freshman real quick, Cam. You know, Armon Franklin last night, 5 points, 5 rebounds, 8 assists, did not turn it over. Just a guy who basically, you know, he's so aggressive with the ball and confident with the ball, and he just kind of aggressives his way into assists because he's just dribbling with his head up and he finds guys. And those lanes are going to close up again against better competition. But, you know, 8 assists for a freshman with no turnovers, that really says something. And I thought what we saw last night from Trace Jackson Davis is, you know, a decent, I think, example of how he's going to impact games this year, which may not always be scoring, you know, only 8 points, but was efficient in terms of going 4 for 5. Didn't get to the free throw line, which I'm sure Archie Miller isn't happy about, but had 6 rebounds and 4 block shots and continues to be a guy who shows great instincts as a weak side defender. And obviously he's going to, you know, have to continue to learn how to play in the pack line and everything as a freshman, but is really showing that when you want to go with defensive lineups, he's a guy that you want to have out there because he can really help you erase mistakes and give Indiana some rim protection that Joey Brunk doesn't really provide and that you can't always count on Deron Davis for. So that was really impressive. And, you know, so Cam, I think just seeing those two freshmen continue to really just play mature basketball, you know, when they're out there, that's really encouraging.
Yeah, there was a moment, I believe it was in the first half, where kind of on the topic of heat check deep three-pointers, Armon launched one from, I think it was the right side of the court, and missed everything. You know, it hit the top of the backboard. I think it went to Joey Brunk for an offensive rebound and a put back, but it was just a terrible shot. But it's the idea of him having the confidence and the lack of hesitancy to shoot that shot. I mean, the fact that he feels, you know, willing and able in this Archie Miller offensive system to take that shot and, you know, probably not be as hesitant or as scared of the repercussions as maybe he should be shows just how much confidence he has and how well he can fit into this offense. And I personally thought Trace Jackson Davis looked pretty fluid last night in terms of switching from, you know, kind of moving out towards the perimeter, setting some kind of off-ball screens, then moving inside and establishing himself in the post. I mean, granted, Western Illinois is not a particularly big team or, you know, a particularly strong team, especially compared to what Indiana has to offer in the front line. But Trace did seem to really fit in there, you know, kind of on the basketball court, didn't show maybe, you know, the signs of a lack of confidence that we saw from a Demezi Anderson last year or something like that. And also to your point on Trace, just the maturity and the athleticism that he can offer really differentiates himself from the rest of the front court options that Indiana has. So we thought about that early in the season as a reason why he would get immediate playing time. And that's something that's come to fruition so far through the exhibition and this game against Western Illinois.
You know, Alex, it was a good performance. It was an encouraging performance in terms of, you know, things that you can take away that Indiana really needs to improve on. I found it interesting that, you know, Archie Miller seemed a little ornery in the postgame press conference and did not seem happy at all about the defense. And, you know, you look at the final numbers, you know, points per possession, 0.915 for Western Illinois, a number that was buoyed by, you know, a three-quarter court shot and a banked-in three-pointer. So, you know, the number might have been better otherwise. But there were times where the defense kind of felt a little bit leaky, and Archie said he wasn't, you know, real happy with the defense. What did you take away in terms of the defense and other things that you felt were lacking in this performance that are clear signs of, hey, this needs to get better as the competition improves?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I read in too much into him, you know, kind of basically challenging his team to continue to get better and demand more defensively. I mean, you don't want to come out after game one and say, hey, we were really good defensively. We were kind of in midseason form. That's just not the kind of coach or guy that Archie Miller is. He's a guy that watches every possession, and if there's one thing that he doesn't like, he's going to remember that and call that out rather than maybe the 9 or 10 things that he did like. So I don't read a whole lot into it. There was some, and this is the challenge with this schedule, I think, this month. You know, when you're up 20 or 25, you have a tendency to relax. You know, you're not in a situation where you're being challenged every possession. And so you're going to have breakdowns. And I think with any young team, figuring out how to sustain the same intensity level over the course of a 40-minute game is something you have to learn. Indiana was pretty good defensively last year at times, but they had their stretches where, you know, 5 or 7 minutes of a game against a good team where you kind of relax or kind of have some bad habits creep in, that can cost you. And so I think what he's trying to do more than anything else is just say, hey, we're a work in progress right now. Every team is, and we have to get better. And so, I didn't think there was anything that was particularly egregious defensively. I think they had some poor closeouts on some shooters, which I figured Western Illinois was going to present some challenges with its 3-point shooting. But beyond that, I think it's just a coach that is challenging his team and realizes that there's a long way to go. And he knows that this team is going to have to be really good defensively to get where it wants to be. It's not going to be a team that's going to come out and score 80 points on a consistent basis and outscore people. They're going to win games in the Big Ten by locking people down. And so he's just going to continue to harp on that, I think, this whole month. And, the one way you get guys' attention is you know, sometimes it's in the huddle, sometimes it's in practice, sometimes it's, you know, based on what you say in the post game. And I'm sure that you never want to give the idea to a team that you're satisfied with everything. So there's always going to be a critique of some kind. And last night for Archie Miller, it was the defense.
You know, on the subject of habits from earlier, the one habit that we've seen now in this game and in the exhibition game is a real struggle by the bench the first time they get in the game in the first half. You know, in the exhibition game, Indiana jumped out to the big lead. The bench came in, the lead evaporated. Last night, you know, really nice start. Bench came in, lead evaporated. To a certain extent, I think that will be ameliorated when you get your guard depth back and those guys kind of have their win back. You know, Al hasn't, you know, is still kind of getting back in shape. Rob obviously is not fully back in shape. And so, you know, and you also don't have Devontae in there. So I think, you know, part of that when you're not maybe having to play Demezi Anderson as a two and you can always have two or possibly even three ball handlers on the court, that will certainly help. And I think also, you know, Jerome Hunter getting into more of a rhythm and Race Thompson getting into more of a rhythm. And you know, I just think some of those bench guys are guys that didn't play a lot last year. And so it's almost like they're just kind of getting their feet back under them. So Cam, I think that is something to look at from the first two games where you say, hey, this definitely needs to improve. But I'm not concerned about it yet just because I think there are some reasons that kind of make sense why there's a little bit of a drop off there. Now, if it continues, that's not going to be good because the strength of this team needs to be, hey, we can go 10-11 any night and there's not a big drop off. Archie's talked about that. So I imagine he's probably a little frustrated about, you know, what he's seen from the bench in those first halves. That's something that needs to get better, but I'm, again, not ready to sound any alarms on it yet.
Right, yeah, and I think that's also a product of just where Indiana is team right now, because you can have guys coming off the bench to start, whether it's Jerome Hunter or Race Thompson or even Deron Davis to an extent, who are still kind of working their way back into game shape, working their way back into the flow of what this season is going to look like for them. And then the other product of it is just the fact that before the Western Illinois game, Archie Miller talked about how the first half of games, especially during this little 7-8 game non-conference stretch to start, is just going to feature a complete hodgepodge of lineups. He's going to be throwing, you know, 5 or 6 different lineups out there in the first half, kind of throwing things at the wall, seeing what sticks and what doesn't before kind of hitting the reset button for the second half and then going with maybe 2 or 3 lineups that have been tried and true and had a good bit of run there in the opening 20 minutes. So it's literally just going to be kind of, you know, a mixing and matching in the first half, and that's going to maybe throw some bench guys off their game because no one's going to have maybe that set determined role here in November and early in the early part of December that you figure they expect to have in the later part of January to early February when Big Ten play is kind of up and going.
Cam, let me ask you a question. When you came to Indiana, did you think that you would ever see an Indiana football team get 7 wins by the first weekend in November? Like, did you think that was possible?
I didn't think I'd see an Indiana football team have 7 wins, like, over the course of my first 2 years here, let alone in one season and before it's over, even.
And I ask you this because our friends at Home Field Apparel, they are on the cusp of perhaps the greatest called shot in sports apparel history with their 9-Windiana t-shirt that Indiana is now 2 wins away from. And if you haven't checked that out, go to homefieldapparel.com. In addition to that shirt, they've been releasing a new football-themed shirt every week this season. So they've got a lot of great options there. And all of their classic basketball designs, the NCAA championship design, the sneakers design, which you can actually get in 3 different cuts. And, of course, the Bison logo hoodie, which we've told everybody about. We all have. It's my favorite article of clothing for the winter. You can find all of that at homefieldapparel.com. And when you use our promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, you will get 20% off of your entire order. So go to homefieldapparel.com, use the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, get 20% off. And if Indiana gets 2 more victories, you are literally obligated. As an Indiana fan, you have to go get that 9-Windiana shirt, because for those guys to stick their necks out there before the season, when few people were even predicting 6 victories, if the Hoosiers go do that, that would be quite a Ruthian call by our friends at Home Field Apparel. So homefieldapparel.com, promo code BRINK for 20% off. Yeah, Alex, thoughts on the football team and their success so far?
I was disappointed to see that Michael Penix is out for the year. That's
oh, man.
Not good news for a season going really well, but it seems like Peyton Ramsey's been more than a capable fill-in, and it seems like the 9-win thing could still definitely happen. I mean, they just have to beat Purdue and win the bowl game, right? I don't know that many people think that they're going to go up to Penn State and win, and the Michigan game at home probably seems a little bit harder now. But
we're beating Michigan. No. We're beating Michigan. That streak ends this year. It ends this year. We're beating Michigan. First time since 87.
Cam could probably forecast this better than us, since he's on that beat, and I'm just watching from the couch.
Okay, but let's. I want to talk to you about the schedule, Cam. Indiana's basketball schedule. You wrote about it for Inside the Hall, and I think, you know, Alex, we talked about it a lot this offseason, and I think for the most part we were in agreement that for this team this year, it was a schedule that made sense. Not a schedule that would have made a lot of sense for a veteran team that had a lot of guys in similar roles, and you really, you know, you have a lot of confidence in from the start of the season. But for this season, for this team, it seems to make sense. And given the guard injuries, it makes even more sense and kind of sets up even nicer. So what are your thoughts on the schedule, Cam, and how do you think Indiana fans should approach this as we go through November?
Yeah, so if you look at the non-conference schedule, it doesn't look great in terms of statistics or on paper. What I kind of based my article off of is Matt Norlander from CBS Sports made his own kind of proprietary metric, taking a look at every non-conference schedule for Power 5 conference teams, plus a couple of the, you know, the better mid-majors like a Gonzaga, you know, teams like that. I think VCU is one of them as well. So when you look at Indiana has the 85th best non-conference schedule out of 92 teams. So I guess you could also call it the 7th worst non-conference schedule. So, you know, down there with teams like Virginia Tech and Rutgers. So, you know, not in great company. I think the average predicted league finish from Lindy's for Indiana's non-conference opponents is like 6.7. So really middle of the pack teams, and only a couple like Princeton or Louisiana Tech maybe have an outside chance of winning their regular season league title. But to your point, it is kind of, you know, a blessing in disguise, I think, is what Alex called it earlier in the podcast. Is there's no way that when they were, you know, comprising this non-conference schedule, they could have predicted that, you know, most of their backcourt players, Al Durham, Rob Finney, Devontae Green, would have had injury scares at some point in the month leading up to the season, and in the case of Devontae, leading into the start of the season. But this does give you a great chance to, you know, give some of the younger guys a run out there, whether it's Armon Franklin or, you know, we've talked about Jerome Hunter a bit, kind of shaking off the rust and getting into game flow. These are games where you can get away with doing that, and you can get away with probably a few more mistakes than you would have given some of these past non-conference schedules when Duke's been on there, or North Carolina, or you know, they've had no Gavitt games involvement this year, so you know you're missing out on a Seton Hall or something like that. And also, I guess maybe the unfortunate aspect is once this team maybe kind of molds itself more into what Archie Miller wants it to be, when December comes around and you do have those bigger non-conference games against the Florida State, UConn, Notre Dame, and Arkansas, Florida State's really the only one of those teams that's super super appealing from a resume standpoint if it comes down to the NCAA tournament again. You go from last season where the non-conference was a strength and was a reason why Indiana had a strong case to make the NCAA tournament to this year where it's going to have to be a bit more dependent on what the Hoosiers do in conference play because Florida State's the only non-conference opponent that's returning off an NCAA tournament appearance. And that really, you know, kind of slims the margin for error as well because you may not be able to recover from losing to a Troy or losing to a Princeton as easy as you could have if that slip-up happened last year because you have a Marquette win from last year to balance it out, but that doesn't really present itself on the schedule this year.
Yeah. You know, Alex, one other thing that I wanted to talk about just in terms of what we saw last night and what we, you know, saw in the exhibition game is the big guys, Joey Brunk and Deron Davis. I think it's pretty clear now why Joey Brunk won the starting job. I mean, he's been more active. He's been more effective when he's been on the court. I thought Deron at times last night looked, you know, slow to get up and down the court, slow to recover on the defensive end. He had a couple of nice possessions, but also had a couple where, you know, it's almost like his body just couldn't take him quick enough to where his mind wanted to go. And he also just hasn't really been able to get in the flow offensively against some competition that you would think he would dominate. He hasn't really gotten the ball low on the block. He's kind of gone up with a little more finesse than you would like to see in some of these games. The way I feel about this is I'm really encouraged by what we've seen from Joey Brunk so far. You know, I think some of the offseason hype about him and the statistical impact he was going to have was maybe a little overdone based on what we saw at Butler. But I think attitude-wise, toughness-wise, like he's going to bring all those things. And we've seen them, and they've been effective. With Deron, I'm not that interested in how he does in these early games because he's a guy that we've seen it for 3 years. He seems to rise to the occasion in really tough games against big opponents. And so even though he hasn't looked that good, I just find myself not that concerned about it. And really, as long as he gets to December healthy, that's kind of all I care about from him. Is that a fair way to view him and to look at Joey here in the early going of the season?
Yeah, it almost feels like Deron's on, to use an NBA term, load management right now. They want to get him in there and get him some reps, but it's also like there's no reason to play him a ton of minutes right now against these teams. I think right now, just my sense and reading everything through the offseason, seeing that Joey Brunk was kind of the offseason, I guess, champion in the weight room, to me, he deserves the starting position right now. It seems like he's outworked Deron to this point. But I also think it would be kind of foolish for Indiana or the staff to just kind of think of Deron as a back burner option once we get into the meat of the schedule, because when they get up against some teams that have some front court size and length, he's going to be arguably the best option in the post to throw the ball down in and get a bucket. I mean, Joey Brunk, I think he's going to have his moments where he's good, but I just don't think in terms of a back-to-the-basket player, he's going to be as effective against athleticism and length as Deron can be. So, you know, Jared, I'm kind of in the same boat with you. I don't read too much into the fact that I think he only played 8 or 9 minutes last night. I think it's kind of a smart approach with him, given his injury history, given the fact that, you know, you want him to be healthy for the meat of the schedule. There's no reason to try to play him 20, 25 minutes at this point of the season. And right now, I mean, Joey Brunk, give him credit. He's earned the right to start. And as long as Deron's kind of happy with this role and realizes that they have a plan for him building to kind of, you know, the marquee games and are going to feature him more in those, I think this approach is fine right now.
Cam, what's the feeling on campus about this team? It's interesting to juxtapose last season to this season. I mean, last year, obviously, the hype of Romeo Langford coming in, you know, there was a lot of excitement. It felt like even, you know, that first game against Chicago State, it felt like the attendance was good and there was a lot of energy. Obviously, the Marquette game came soon thereafter, and that was just an explosion at the beginning and a huge victory. And this season, and again, we've only had an exhibition game and one game against a team that's 300th in KenPom, so you don't necessarily expect, you know, Duke-level crowd crowd noise and engagement. But it seemed a little bit less even than I would expect. And I'm just wondering, like, what's the excitement level? What is the interest level among students and just in town right now about this team as the season kicks off? Is it wait and see, we're keeping this team at arm's length, or is it just the schedule hasn't given us any good opportunities to bring people in. Let's just wait and see and don't make any judgments about that.
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, I still have, you know, friends who are freshmen who were still, you know, completely jazzed and over the moon to be in the building for the Gannon exhibition, let alone go to their first real basketball game last night against Western Illinois. But at the same time, I think this is a team that's going to have to kind of do something notable to get most of the campus energized, just mainly because of the past 2 years of shortcomings in Archie Miller's tenure here. They're going to have to maybe knock off Florida State at home, or they're going to have to, you know, maybe have a rousing victory over winter break, whether that's, I believe that Maryland game is right on the tail end of Indiana's winter break for students this year with the way our schedules line up, or you know, beat Notre Dame kind of soundly at Bankers Life or something like that. They're going to have to do something to maybe inspire a little of momentum to get people to come out in forces, because, you know, if this is a team that's kind of middle of the pack with, you know, not a signature win by the time late January, early February rolls around, I think you'll get the, you know, the standard good crowd for the Purdue game. And, you know, anytime a top five, top 10 team comes to town, maybe the building will come alive, but it's going to be a lot harder to draw people in for, you know, some of those more middling Big Ten opponents compared to years past, just because last year you had the built-in excitement with Romeo Langford. And, you know, even when things were going bad in conference play there was still, you know, a sense of optimism around the team that they could turn it around. I think just maybe the lack of distinct star power this year works against that from a student and, you know, campus hype perspective. But I mean, people will still show up to the games. I mean, they're not going to have the Indiana football problem where they're a good team and there's still questions about the fan support. So I think it'll still be pretty good, but they're going to have to do something. I think beating Florida State would go a long way to that, since that is really the first signature game and the first game that people are probably going to be, as a whole, really excited about to watch or attend here in Bloomington.
Yeah. Alex, can we talk real quick about this note that you just put in the chat? Because I think it's a notable one. This is episode number what of Podcast on the Brink?
300.
300. Cam, you are on episode 300 of Podcast on the Brink. That's incredible.
We were saving him for episode 300.
We were. It's a good opportunity to thank all the audience members, obviously, because if we didn't have people listening every single week, we wouldn't keep doing this show. I haven't been with you for 300 of them, Alex. This is 300 overall.
Yeah, I don't think I've done 300 either, because in the early days, it was just Dollinger and Rosenstein, and I kind of came on when they invited me. But yeah, I'd have to look back, but I'd say we've done probably at least 200 together. Yeah. Right. At least every week for almost more than 4 or 5 years. That's some dedication, man.
It's pretty good. That is pretty good. I want to talk a little bit about what we saw last night, opening night around the Big Ten. Alex, last year, if we think back, the conference kind of surprised some people early, notching a lot of big wins early in November. I think, if I remember correctly, you know, Iowa got a couple of big wins, and, you know, I think Purdue got a few. Like, was it last year that Michigan annihilated Villanova? Was that last year? Was that, yeah, I mean, so the conference really got a lot of big wins early on. And that helps, obviously, when the conference is doing well, it kind of lifts everybody up. And so last night, as I started to see some of the results come in, you know, Illinois is having to go to overtime against Nicholls State. You know, my first reaction was to kind of, you know, point and laugh a little bit as someone who has not been on the Illinois hype train. But then once I got past that, I was like, all right, but Illinois still win the game, because, you know, it's look, these are our Big Ten rivals, and certain fan bases that will remain nameless, we like to see, you know, them lose and suffer. But the way that NCAA tournament selection works anymore, you really have to kind of root for the Big Ten to do well in the non-conference, especially if you're a team that projects possibly to be on the bubble, which I think is a reasonable expectation, you know, for, you know, maybe a median outcome for Indiana's season, which is they may be somewhere near the bubble. You want that conference strength to be good. And so Illinois not playing well against Nicholls, Michigan struggling with Appalachian State. Why they schedule Appalachian State in sports anymore, I have no idea. You know, Nebraska losing to whoever they lost to. Michigan State losing, not a great night. Wisconsin lost, not a great night for the conference, and certainly something that we hope to see improve as we go through November and December. Otherwise, you know, the conference, it may be one of those years where the conference can only get 5 or 6 or 7 teams in, you know, and then that's going to make it a lot harder for some of those teams in the Big Ten's middle, that morass that we've talked about. You know, it's going to make things a little bit harder for them come NCAA tournament time.
Yeah, and with Indiana's quote unquote soft non-conference schedule this year, they need their Big Ten teams to do well in the non-conference so that when they get to league play, those wins mean something. Because if you have, you know, seven or eight teams in the league, they're just kind of middle of the pack, mediocre, and that's all you beat in conference play, you could end up with a situation. It was Ohio State. It was a couple, 4 or 5 years ago, where they were like something like 11-7 in the league and didn't make the tournament. It was because they didn't beat anybody, and some of the teams in the Big Ten just weren't that good. And you know, I look at obviously Michigan State. There's no shame there losing to Kentucky, but a game like last night, Wisconsin and St. Mary's, that, you know, that's a game that you want. You look at if you're a Big Ten fan, you're an Indiana fan, you look and you say, hey, that would have been a good game to get because, you know, it just kind of props up the league overall. I mean, Illinois, we've talked about this all off season. I was never fully aboard the hype train. I think they're going to be better, but I just kind of look back at the finish of their season a year ago and how Indiana just completely destroyed them on their home court and thought, you know, I don't necessarily buy into them being this powerhouse. And I think last night confirmed that they've got work to do. Michigan is a brand new team. They've got a new system. So, you know, I think the Gavitt games coming up here are going to tell us a lot about some of these Big Ten teams because there's no hiding. You know, Indiana's going to have a chance to hide here for a month, basically. Some of these teams are not going to have that opportunity, so we're going to learn a lot. I mean, Nebraska came out last night and made me rethink my pick of Northwestern finishing last because to lose at home by 20 to a sub-250 KenPom team, that's just not a good look. So I guess from an Indiana perspective, you look at it and say that, well, they get to play Nebraska twice, but they better beat Nebraska twice if that's what Nebraska is going to be.
How much fun would it have been to watch that game with Tim Miles? Actually, he's a nice guy, so he probably didn't want to see them.
He was calling a game last night, so he probably didn't get to see it, but I mean,
watching any game with Tim Miles seems fun.
Thank goodness we didn't. Thank goodness we didn't dive into Nebraska with an offseason episode because they literally have like 13 or 14 new players. I mean, I just don't. They took that foreign trip and I guess got a head start on the season, but that last night was just, I mean, I didn't watch any of it and I won't watch any of it, but getting destroyed like that is just not a good look. I don't know. I mean, I think the bottom of the league this year has a chance to be pretty brutal. I mean, I just don't have any confidence that Nebraska or Northwestern is going to be anything of substance this year.
Cam, did you take anything away from the Big Ten's performance on opening night and just anything else that we saw on opening night with the Champions Classic also going on?
Yeah, I was able to catch a bit of Michigan State, Kentucky. Obviously, like Alex said, really no shame in losing to the Wildcats. A bit of uncharacteristic kind of offensive possessions down the stretch there from a Tom Izzo coach team, which I thought was a bit interesting. I watched a good deal of Wisconsin, St. Mary's. They were playing that game in South Dakota for some reason because money, I guess. I mean, whatever for that reason. But that was a pretty good game, pretty balanced game. I mean, St. Mary's is a top 20 team. You know, probably be right there with Gonzaga in the West Coast as well. I enjoyed seeing Penn State score more than 80 points for the first time in a while at home against Maryland Eastern Shore. But yeah, you can't lose. From Nebraska's standpoint, you cannot lose to California Riverside at home by like 20, especially to start the Fred Hoiberg era. Like, that's just a real head shaker. I mean, that's a bye game you're losing to, so you get the dreaded John Rothstein tweet at that as well. So further shame.
Cam, there are some older fans listening to this right now in Southern Indiana that scoffed and may have even turned this off when you said there's no shame to losing to Kentucky. There's always shame in losing to Kentucky. So I'm going to apologize to those fans on behalf of you for that misstatement there. So what are we looking for now moving forward these next few games? I think, obviously, we want to see when Devontae Green comes back. Do any of us have any insight on Devontae? Like, I keep hearing that it's not really serious, but it also doesn't sound like there's any timetable for when he's coming back. So, like, are you guys hearing anything else about when we might expect him back, the severity of this injury? Because I can't really seem to get anything concrete on it. Alex, Cam,
Well, I would say it's almost kind of like what Alex was saying earlier about Deron Davis. Like, you don't want to rush him in because what's the benefit of playing him, you know, 20 to 25 minutes in these games? I mean, granted, you'd like to get him maybe a couple short runouts before the non-conference play really heats up with Florida State, and then you start into Big Ten play with Wisconsin. But here on November 6th, there's no reason to bring him back on Saturday when you can also bring him back on, you know, November 20th and November 21st, and especially with an injury like a hamstring where it's very touch and go, and you know, somebody could, you know, get aggravated at the slightest jump or, you know, quick lateral movement or something like that.
Alex, do you have any insight on
Devontae? I mean,
I'm ready for the year of green to start, and it hasn't started.
I agree with Cam. You know, it doesn't sound like he's practiced, so I would think that would be the next step to kind of getting back in the lineup. I think you want to ease him back in. It doesn't sound to me like a return is imminent, so I would not be surprised if he's out here at least a couple more games before he's back. Hamstrings can be tricky, and as Cam said, this is something you don't want to rush back and then re-aggravate, because then you're talking about a situation where he could be out for some of these December games, and that's just not something that Indiana wants to get into.
Yeah, I mean, I guess as long as Al Durham's out there playing like Greg Graham, you know, you can handle that. By the way, speaking of Al, one point that I wanted to make that I thought was a little thing, and maybe it won't mean anything long term, but could, he got a few calls last night, which was nice to see. I mean, last year, you know, we talked about this. I think we talked about it on an episode of the Assembly Call where we broke down his numbers. You know, his free throw rate really dropped as a sophomore, and it just felt like, you know, he wasn't as effective going to the basket, and it felt like over and over we'd come on the postgame show, Alex, and come on this show and talk about how he's just not getting calls. And, you know, I wonder if part of it was he was kind of overselling the contact at times. Part of it is just he's a sophomore, he doesn't have the respect yet. Last night it was nice to see him drive in a few times, get kind of knocked off his mark, and he got the foul call. And he actually got to go to the line, you know, had four free throw attempts, made all of them. He's one of Indiana's best free throw shooters. To me, the difference between Al being a 10, 11 point score and potentially a 13, 14 point score per game is getting that free throw rate up and getting himself 3, 4, 5 free throws a game. Look down at his game log last year. The games when he got to the line, he was much more productive. It's almost like he's got to, you know, get those drives to the basket, get fouled, get to the free throw line to really feel in the game. And so, again, you know, I mean, I don't know what you take from that, Alex, but it was at least nice to see him, A, being aggressive and continuing to attack the basket, and B, start getting some calls. And if that's a harbinger of things to come, it's you know, you mentioned it earlier. Indiana's not going to outscore a lot. They're not going to be scoring 80, 90 points. They're going to win games offensively at the margins. You know, they've got to cut down turnovers. They've got to get offensive rebounds. They've got to get to the free throw line more. If Al can be a guy that shoots a couple more free throws a game, that could be the difference between a win and a loss. And that helps you there at the margin. So I hope that's a sign of things to come.
Yeah, I mean, you look back at his stats on the EYBL his last year when he played for Southern Stampede. He wasn't a great shooter, but I think he was top five in all of EYBL in free throw rate, which is measurement of free throws attempted divided by field goals attempted, basically showing how well you do as a player getting to the line. And he was one of the top five players on arguably the best prep circuit in that. So it's something he can do. It's something he needs to continue to do, because there's going to be nights where the shots aren't falling. I mean, he made 3 of 3 last night. That's not, you know, Indiana's just not going to be. I mean, I think we all agree that they just need to be an average perimeter shooting team. They were so bad last year that if they can just kind of get to be respectable, I think that alone gives them a major boost as an offense. And one other refereeing oddity last night that I noticed, and I wasn't surprised because it was one of my favorites, Bo Borowski, on the call, was we actually had a flopping warning last night, which my vantage point's, you know, I have a really good seat kind of there on what I like to call Fisher Row, and Bo came over to the table and he said flopping warning, and I'd never heard that before. I don't know if that's a new thing this year, but that was that's something I'd like to see more of, to eliminate that from the game. So it's there's never a dull moment with Bo on the whistle, and last night we were treated to some extracurricular entertainment there.
Nice. Hey, get the flopping out of there. I'm fine with that. Okay, Indiana plays Saturday, Cam. Portland State. What are you kind of watching for in this game?
So something Archie Miller referenced in his postgame press conference as well is just the different looks that these non-conference teams will give Indiana in this 7-8 game stretch. That granted, they're not the best opposition, but they will challenge Indiana in different ways, offensively and defensively. And what Portland State's going to bring to the table is a lot of pressing. They like to high press. So especially if Devontae Green's still going to be out, which is, you know, something that we kind of all expect at this point, we're going to see Armon Franklin and Al Durham in major ball handling roles for the first time in their careers against the press. And I think that could maybe lead to some turnovers and maybe some, you know, ineffective play, at least at the start. But I'm looking to see how, for Franklin in particular, how they grow out of that, how over the course of a 40-minute game, they're able to maybe pick and choose the right passes, or if schematically Archie does anything different to kind of combat that and give them more relief, whether it's, you know, guys running back for outlets, or maybe even Trace Jackson Davis playing a bit more, just because as a big man, he's more mobile if he wants to move into, you know, the back part of the court to give them a release outlet for passing. This could be a game even where if you have Deron Davis in there, his passing shows out a bit more compared to someone like Joey Brunk in the post. So just kind of the way Indiana plays against Portland State's press is probably going to be maybe one of the only significant takeaways from a game against a Vikings team, which is not predicted to be very good in the Big Sky this year.
Hey, now Portland State coming off a 25-point victory on opening night.
They
forced 18 turnovers. They forced 31 turnovers. They had 18 steals. But yes, it was against Puget Sound. So not sure how much we can take from that.
Against who?
Puget Sound. Puget.
What's that?
Puget Sound.
I believe that's a body of water. Yeah. It's a body of water by Washington, I believe, Alex.
Yes.
I'm unfamiliar with that program. What are they? Okay, I'm confused. I'm going to have to do some research.
Yeah, They're not in Ken Pom's rankings, so that's all. Okay, that's all okay. We need to know about.
So they have an NR next to them.
They have an NR. Yes, they do. Okay. So really good point. It will be nice to see how Indiana does there. You know, to me, other things to watch: do the bench guys look more comfortable? You know, Demezi Anderson came in, turned the ball over, you know, a little bit more than you would like to see last night. You know, did, you know, hit a nice jump shot. Would like to see him continue to get into the flow. And then Jerome Hunter, you know, a guy who, you know, we saw him last night, had that really nice steal and then layup in the first half, took himself out and then didn't play again for a while, but came back in the second half. You know, just to see him get more comfortable and see one of those jump shots that he takes, you know, go in. I think these early games are really important for Jerome, who didn't play last year. We know what kind of talent he has. Now it's about him getting his conditioning up, getting his comfort level up, because that's the kind of guy, you know, Alex, you think back to last season. One of the reasons that we talked about, hey, Indiana maybe really improving toward the end of the year is you get Jerome Hunter back. You know, this is a really talented guy. This was a narrative toward the beginning of the season. And obviously, he never played. And, you know, I think of all the guys on the team, he potentially could have the biggest difference from where he is now to where he could be in February. And so if we could see a visible manifestation of that, you know, in some of these games, I think that would be something important to watch. So in addition to just, you know, how are Al and Rob health-wise, conditioning-wise, you know, continue to see them get better, I'm really interested to see Jerome continue to get into a rhythm as an offensive player, as a defensive player, because that'd be really helpful. Do you have anything else in particular you're watching for, Alex?
No, I mean, on Jerome, I agree with you. I mean, he's the fifth man off the bench last night. There's 10 scholarship players available, and he was the last scholarship player off the bench. So I'm just interested to see kind of how he kind of progresses up that hierarchy. Does he work his way up to being, you know, the first guy off the bench, second guy, third guy? I mean, I think with him too, he's going to be someone that you're not really going to see for extended minutes. I think 16 minutes last night, I think that's kind of the perfect role for him right now, as he kind of gets his feet back underneath him. And as Archie Miller talked about last night after the game, I mean, he's a true freshman. I mean, he was in college last year, but did not practice the whole season. So long way to go for him. I think over the course of the season, he's going to leapfrog Demezi Anderson in terms of the bench hierarchy. I could see him being a guy who's ultimately, you know, 20-25 minute per game player when it's all said and done. So that's one thing I am kind of fascinated to watch over the course of the month. How better can he get before, you know, they play Florida State? Because I think potentially he's a game changer for Indiana.
Definitely. Cam, thank you for joining us. Always great to have you. You'll be at the Portland State game, I assume.
Yeah, and just one real quick thing. I did a quick bit of a Puget Sound research. Their nickname is the Loggers. So I just wanted to say that on Podcast on the Brink.
All right, the Puget Sound Loggers. There we go. Bringing you all kinds of knowledge that you didn't
know. We need to get home field on the Puget Sound apparel.
I would buy a Puget Sound shirt. I'm just going to say that. The Puget Sound Loggers, I would buy a shirt. Why not? Go to homefieldapparel.com again, promo code Brink to get 20% off your entire order. Hey, thank you guys again for being with us on this journey, 300 episodes. We look forward to 300 more, don't we, Alex? 600 episodes of Podcast on the Brink. Where will the program be on episode 600?
Let's see, that'll be, what, 6 years from now?
Yeah, Colin will be playing for IU by
probably,
then, right?
Probably coming off like three straight national championships. So
That's right.
We may get there quicker because we'll have to. We may just start recording every day if they ever reach that level.
Oh my! Wouldn't that be wonderful? Wouldn't that be wonderful? All right, everybody, thanks for being here with us. We will talk to you next week. We'll be live assembly call as soon as the Portland State game ends. I'm about to say the Puget Sound game. We're not actually playing Puget Sound. We're playing Portland State. You can join us on the postgame show after that on Saturday, and we'll be back with you next week on Podcast on the Brink. See you, everybody. Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. Remember to join me and my co-hosts for more IU basketball talk at assemblycall.com and visit Alex over at insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana basketball. If you want to support Podcast on the Brink, here is the single best way to do it. Tell anyone you know who loves IU hoops about us and suggest that they subscribe. Podcast on the Brink can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else podcasts are available. Tell your social media followers, email your friends, text your family members. For weekly discussion about IU basketball, they need to be subscribed to Podcast on the Brink. We'll talk to you next time. Go Hoosiers.